This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The La Crosse River Marsh is an incredibly diverse ecosystem, providing habitat for many plants and animals. It's also a natural getaway in the heart of the city for people wanting to walk or bike through the trails. The marsh has a complicated history, and there always seems to be talks whether it can be developed upon. Recently, a group formed in La Crosse with hopes of preserving and enhancing the marsh. Today, to talk about this new group are two of its founding board members of Friends of the Marsh, Chuck Lee, he's a UW La Crosse History Department chair, and Richard Frost is a retired history teacher and a naturalist at Myrick Hixon Eco Park. I'm wondering if first you can talk about why was this new group, Friends of the Marsh, why was this formed? Chuck?
Well, it seemed like an opportune moment. Many of us have been in La Crosse active in preserving the marsh and for over 20 years. In some respects, we grew out of, the Friends of the Marsh grew out of an earlier organization, the La Crosse Marsh Coalition. That group, however, was formed specifically to be a public watchdog group in a land use study that was done with the city, the county, and the state in the 90s. Started in 1988, actually. A two-year study that went on and took 10 years. And that was a very active period for the Marsh Coalition and for a couple of other organizations, focused almost exclusively on the issue of transportation and a north-south highway. Although there were other issues involved, such as recreation, such as environment, such as commerce. There were four parts of that study. Transportation tended to dominate the public discussion of it. Interestingly enough, transportation was the one of those four parts left out of the final land use plan. And it was left out because there was no agreement on it. The other three parts, recreation, environment, and commercial, were included and became part of a long-range plan for the marsh. Since that period of time, and that sort of came to an end in 1998 with a binding referendum, which for a few years prevented the city from spending money on a highway, a specific plan through the marsh. That was sort of the defining moment, and there have been really no substantial discussions since then, reviving those old issues. We're currently in a position where a new transportation study will be done. Just exactly the shape of that study, we don't really know. So there was a very active period, then a long period where the Marsh Coalition stayed active, but stayed active in other areas. And so, to long story short, a number of us felt that it was time for a somewhat different kind of group, a group that didn't take its sole identity off of transportation planning, but a group that was positive and supportive of both the marsh and of the eco park. There had been some changes in the community that was sort of ready for this.
So is the coalition still active at this point in time?
No.
Okay.
Seems like everybody remembers it, but no, there's not an active organization.
Okay. And this will take the Friends of the Marsh, almost looks at all the different aspects of the marsh itself.
Yes, certainly.
Okay. Yeah. Richard, I want to come to you. We talk about why this group is needed and why you are doing the work that you're doing. But I'm wondering if you can remind people who may not be so familiar with the marsh, what exactly the marsh is.
I think one of the historians who has talked about the marsh has described it as the finest urban wetland in the state, and it is. It's 1,000 acres. It's prime habitat. It occupies a central place in the life of La Crosse. Realtors like to use the phrase location, 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 and that describes perfectly this marsh. It's located right in our midst, directly between North and South La Crosse, a central place in our city. People who go from north to south have to cross it every day. And because of that, it has been a prime site for development. And also because it's prime habitat, there's that inherent conflict. So basically we have a marsh where a city wants to be, a city where a marsh wants to be. And so that inherent conflict. And so, as I mentioned, it's first-class habitat, but because of its location, it's right adjacent to the university. It's also plays a big life in the school district of La Crosse because of the Myra Kickson Eco Park right beside the marsh, which provides educational programs primarily to the school district of La Crosse, but also to many other school districts around here, as well as many, many teachers or instructors at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse who use that as a laboratory. As you can see, it has a role naturally. It has a role in terms of flood control. It has a role in terms of habitat. It has a role in terms of recreation. So all because of its location.
And let's dive into the natural role that it plays. If you take a walk through the marsh, or if you're driving through the marsh, you may see cranes, and you might hear different frogs and toads. Can you talk about just more of these different natural occurrences that are going on in there?
We live on a flyway because of the Mississippi. Come May, the marsh will be loaded with, not big, dramatic white birds, but with small little brown birds who have come up from South America. They stop off here. Many of them are headed as far north as the Arctic. But these warblers and whatnot that are tropical, spend the winters in the tropics and then come up north here. Last spring, there were 300 different species identified.
Of birds?
In the marsh.
Wow.
Period. That's incredible. There are resident red fox, river otter, beaver, coarse muskrats. Just too many things to name.
And plants, too.
Absolutely.
And Richard, you talked about the role that the marsh plays in flood control for the city, too.
Right, and wetlands have traditionally played this role, a big role. I think a prime example would be Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans and the fact that it wasn't protected by its wetlands, which were developed. And so we had this huge tragedy, nothing to stop that flood surge during the hurricane. And so here, too, we have three rivers that will flood every spring to some degree, and those floodwaters have to go somewhere. And the marsh acts like a gigantic sponge to absorb a lot of those floodwaters. And those floodwaters, where they'll go, there's two options. They can go into a marsh, which can hold them and absorb them and release them slowly, or they can go into people's and businesses' basements. And so if we develop it, and which we have to some degree, and if we don't save it, it can have economic consequences and, you know, a lot of human consequences. So it does have tremendous value, not just as habitat, but economic value as flood control. Something also that we value here, there was just an article in the paper today about the quality of our water in our wells. And the marsh acts as what we call groundwater recharge. There's always water there, so it keeps the water table high, so it keeps our wells filled. And we always have water, even when there's quotas in La Crescent across the river, which doesn't have a wetland. So there are some hidden values here that we don't always see, and that's very important, I think.
So is La Crosse unique in the sense that it has a good portion of land set aside for a marsh along the Mississippi River?
I think so. However, we should realize that basically most cities that are along rivers are built on wetlands, because wherever rivers meet, in this case three rivers, each one of those rivers has a delta of several channels separated by wetlands. And so, again, you have a city being built on a wetland, and of course there's give and take between those two desires, one to have a city, which means filling in that wetland, and the other side, which is to have a wetland which helps mitigate the things that Chuck was talking about, the floods, those kinds of things. For example, 1965, we had the 100-year flood. And if you saw pictures of that, you would see what the impact is. Tremendous. I mean, water flowing from the river into the city like you wouldn't believe. Now, that 100 years doesn't mean we're going to wait another 100 years for the next 100-year flood. It could be next year. So usually these things are forgotten until they happen, which is true for many events. But anyway, because we have that marsh, it can help mitigate that. So we have to really look at that when we think about development there.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking with members of the newly formed Friends of the Marsh group based in La Crosse. My guests are Chuck Lee, he's a UW La Crosse History Professor Department Chair, and Richard Frost is a retired history teacher and a naturalist at Myrick Hixon Eco Park. So development has always been part of the history of the marsh, too. Richard, can you talk about this?
There's been development plans all through our history. Probably the one that most people know about is the infamous Heschler Plan. Now, Frank Heschler was a tremendous citizen, visionary. He was also a developer. And so he had thoughts of developing the marsh, at least the main part of it, the part that's by Myrick Park, basically filling it in, creating almost 1,800 residential lots, creating two lakes, having sandy shoreline along these two lakes, and adding lots of houses to the city tax roll. And in his visionary mind, uniting North and South La Crosse, which had always been separated by this natural barrier. Sounds like a good thing. But the ramifications of that were the other side, the lack of flood control, the idea of filling in the marsh. I think historically the marsh has always been seen as a barrier, as a wasteland. And throughout history, that idea or value of marshland has been changing for the better, I think, towards land. Wetlands are valuable in their own right. And so I think that's where we're at today. We're looking, we have to balance both those things. We have to balance development with preservation and enhancement of that wetland. And that's kind of where we're at right now.
And how do you balance that development and preservation, Chuck?
Well, I think you do it in part by simply deciding what's important to you. And then trying to enhance those things and improve upon them. Now that's a very vague kind of answer, and I don't mean to leave it that way. We are a community that is blessed in a number of different ways. One of the ways we are blessed, of course, is our environment. And the place we inhabit, this place on the Mississippi, between the Mississippi and the Bluffs, and what have you, an awful lot of us who live here because of that, or certainly that's a strong draw to it. I think increasingly we have become aware that those things we value. Really are linked. They're not separate. It's not either the environment or development. I think it's environment and development. Let me explain that. Because we are now aware that unless we have a healthy environment, and by that I mean clean water, clean air, green spaces, accessible outdoors, not just places, but places that everybody can get to, for example, that unless we have those places, then those places that we have developed, our workplaces, our schools, our neighborhoods, et cetera, if we don't have the environmental qualities, then those places are degraded themselves. And we know how they're degraded these days. So they're both necessary. The question is, you know, you don't want to degrade one in order to try to preserve the other or enhance the other. It doesn't work that way.
Richard?
For example, right now, the marsh is not protected. It is owned by the city. There's no level of protection at all. Its existence is completely dependent on the whims of the city, the mayor, and the city council. Right now, they are of the mind of preservation. But that could change with the next election, and that marsh could be developed. A new north-south corridor could be built. It's very, very fragile, both in terms of habitat and in terms of its protection. And so one of the things that we want to try to do is to move that move toward greater levels of protection somehow or another. One thought is to perhaps transfer that marshland to the DNR.
However, which has been in the works for years, and I'm wondering if you can kind of lay that out for us too.
At first, and Chuck can correct me because I think he knows this better than I do, but the thought was because the DNR's mission is to protect our natural resources, that that would be an automatic level of protection that we can add. However, in more recent political times, the DNR has become more politicized. And so then we thought, wait a minute, maybe that's the same problem. If we have a politicized DNR at the state level, maybe they would offer no measure of protection either, because that's dependent on the political whims of the state and the governor and the legislature. But we do want to find some level of long-term protection for the marsh in some way, shape, or form. There's a current issue right now, and that is the Burlington Northern Railroad.
Right, because they're hoping because
they're
going to
double
their
tracks. Yep. Right, and they own that right-of-way, and that goes directly through the marsh. And so basically that's going to be built. Nobody can do anything about that. But we know these trains are running daily, many of them, 100 cars, all full of oil, and there will eventually be a spill. There have been already. We know there will be in the future. What if that's right here in town, in people's backyards? What if that's in the marsh? Then what? You know, will it take something like that to wake people up and say, wait, maybe we need to protect this wetland?
And this issue also of this north-south corridor, a highway going through the marsh, I mean, it just always seems like it's an issue that's sort of bubbling at the surface and that it's never completely gone away.
We always say that once a line is drawn on the map, you can't erase it. And since the 50s, you know, there's been a line on the map. And yet, for the most part, nothing's been done about it. We happen to inhabit a long, narrow, linear set of linked communities. La Crosse, Onalaska, town of Onalaska, Holman, et cetera, if you will. And that's a product of our geography to the extent that this long linear set of communities is going to continue to grow and offers no other transportation solutions other than paving roads, then there's going to be that issue. That, of course, is an inadequate kind of solution. We have, for many, many years, said that to the extent that there is a transportation problem in La Crosse, some people think there is, to the extent that there is, it should be addressed through traffic management. It could be addressed through mass transit. It could be addressed through spot improvements. In other words, there's a lot we have not done. And the notion of just deciding to pave four more lanes as a solution seems kind of ludicrous.
Richard?
Yes. There's some paradoxes in this north-south corridor that was not built, was proposed, was defeated by public referendum. However, the paradox is that that referendum was only voted on by city residents. And most of them voted to preserve the marsh. That was somewhat influenced by the fact that that north-south corridor was going to be going through Indian Hill or on the edge of it, taking some homes. And, of course, because it was going to take homes, it became just a human issue as well, not just a habitat issue. And then there's this other funny thing, and that is that the people who would mostly benefit by that north-south corridor are the suburbs, Holman and Onalaska and Galesville and Trumbull and so on, people who come into La Crosse to work, who are very vital to our economy, but they live outside the city, so they don't get to vote. But they're the ones who want the road because they want to get in and out. So we have this funny situation with people who want the road but don't get to vote on it, and the people who kind of don't want the road but get to vote on it.
The technicality on that was that the vote in 98 was dictated by the fact that the proposed north-south corridor was entirely within the city. That is, and that the city was going to have to help pay for it. And so the referendum focused on the city expending that money. It was yes or no, should it spend that money or should it not? So this was very much a product of the the technicalities of the proposal at the time and of how such decisions were made. That situation has changed substantially since then. We now have a metropolitan planning organization, which is dictated by the state, it includes all of our surrounding communities, including La Crescent. And it is the La Crosse Area Planning Committee then that makes decisions regarding transportation projects within our region. It's a very different circumstance. It's a very different decision-making process than existed at the time. That simply didn't exist at the time.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, I'm talking with members of a newly formed Friends of the Marsh group based in La Crosse. My guests are Chuck Lee, he's the UW La Crosse History Department chair, and Richard Frost, he's a retired history teacher and a naturalist at Myrick Hixon Eco Park. I'm wondering if you can talk more about maybe what Friends of the Marsh, what your group is planning on doing, you know, in the upcoming year or when you're looking long terms in regards to preserving the marsh.
We can talk a little bit about what we have been doing in our immediate future.
Mm-hmm.
Our organization, of course, is what, a month old?
Right.
Something like that. The first event we participated in and helped sponsor, significant sponsor, was Aldo Leopold Weekend, which is a statewide event where communities celebrate the work of Aldo Leopold, founder of American conservationism. We had a wonderful program here in town of readings from the Sand County Almanac and then programs out at the Fish and Wildlife Service Education Center and then at the Eco Park. Really just a fantastic weekend of events. We have had one full member meeting for the Friends organization, where we asked our members to contribute their thoughts about their priorities, what they want us to do, for the future. We will, coming up now later in April, we'll be involved with Earth Day. Richard is helping, or perhaps is organizing, a marsh trail cleanup for Saturday, the 26th of April. For the Earth Fair on Sunday the 27th, the Marsh or the Friends of the Marsh will have a table and information at that. I'll be leading a marsh walk at 3 in the afternoon. So we're getting ready for that. We have additional events, not specific dates for them. You mentioned it before. We would like to hold a series of, I'm going to call them frog walks.
Nice.
This spring, this late spring, in the marsh and in the evening. Somebody else is already doing the early morning birding walks, so we thought maybe the evening we could do that. A friend of mine has done that in the past and can identify frogs and toads by their calls, and so that would be fun. We are talking about this summer to focus again on the biodiversity of the marsh, doing a 24-hour bioblast event in the marsh.
And what's a bioblast event?
Well, that's a citizen science project where a number of people, volunteers, not professionals, would get together and over a 24-hour period document, list, maybe map, every plant, animal, bug, bird within a certain area. Biodiversity in an era of climate change and an era of invasives is a terrifically important concept because, as we are finding out in La Crosse, if every street is lined with ash trees, they're going to be empty of ash trees in the near future. It's simply not in our interest. It's not in the interest of the community, or it's not healthy for the community to have that. It doesn't have to exist. So if we're aware, that then can lead us towards doing certain things. So perhaps a citizen science project or two. We'll have some outings. We'll have some walks throughout the summer. We've talked about a number of things. But we'll be active. We'll be announcing things.
And Richard, it's interesting that education plays such a large role in what this group will be doing, because it plays off of work that both of you have done throughout your careers. Richard, you working with students, different projects in the Marsh. Chuck, you working with UWL students, taking classes out to the Marsh. I'm wondering if you want to add to that or build upon it, Richard.
I taught at Longfellow Middle School, 8th grade history and science. And for 20 years in a row, I took my students there spring and fall, and we built a trail called the Wood Duck Trail. And we wanted basically an environmental service project that our students could work on. And the folks at the Eco Park invited us to take on that trail, which was basically just a mud path. And so we were able to build that trail first with wood chips and culverts and bridges and riprap and all those kinds of things. Now it's switched to limestone screenings because it's more long-lasting. But to watch those students work on those projects was very, very gratifying. We would take them down there, as I said, twice a year, spend a whole day, and they would work on the trail, but they would do other activities as well. And when we would ask the students at the end of the day which was their favorite part, it wasn't the educational things we did. It was working on the trail.
Getting your hands dirty.
Exactly. And then an interesting story. The first year we did it, we put up wood duck houses because it's called the Wood Duck Trail, and it's right along the edge of the marsh, so it's perfect habitat for that. Well, they were made out of wood, and of course, within the first week, they were vandalized, as was expected. And so when I told my students that, they were so angry. And so they decided to start patrolling that after school, that trail, their trail, because all of a sudden now it was their trail. And to see students who might otherwise be vandals become vandal protectors was very cool to see that role reversal. And the work we do at the Eco Park is very much like that. We have hundreds and hundreds of students come. It's up in between 3,000 and 4,000 now a year. So our basic idea is to get students from every grade level we can in the La Crosse District out in that marsh several times a year, because we have spring, summer, and fall programs. And I think the whole idea of environmental education is so key, because if students or adults don't have any knowledge of or experience in these natural places, then they have no interest in protecting them. But if they have experiences there and they begin to appreciate these places, then they begin to love them, and then they want to protect them. And that's, I think, a very important goal for students.
Richard Frost is a retired teacher and a naturalist at Meyer Kixon Eco Park. He's also one of the founding board members of Friends of the Marsh. Chuck Lee is a UW La Crosse history professor and another founding member of the Friends of the Marsh group. Today, we were talking about the newly formed group that's working to enhance and educate people about the La Crosse River Marsh. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, volunteers are needed later this month to help document the plants and animals that are part of the La Crosse County landfill. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook. Like us at WPR Newsmakers. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The La Crosse area's rivers, marsh, and bluffs are known for their richness in biodiversity. But what about the county's landfill? A group of volunteers are setting out later this month to better understand the species that depend on the landfill's habitat. Here today to talk about the effort are Nick Nichols, he's La Crosse County Sustainability Coordinator, Colton Lewis is a Viterbo University student who's working on this project, and Krista Booman is a UW La Crosse student also working on the project. Nick, I'm wondering, you're calling this effort a BioBlitz. Mm-hmm. What exactly is a BioBlitz?
Well, what we're going to do is basically take an inventory of all the flora and fauna that are on the landfill site. We have over 350 acres, and, you know, people have this impression of what a landfill is. They think it's a big hole in the ground. We only have 50 acres of landfill, so we have over 300 acres of other wetland and forest and prairie and grass areas, and we want to know what's out there so that we can protect what we should be protecting and get rid of those invasive species that shouldn't be in the area.
And what exactly prompted this project?
The landfill is in the middle of a process of creating a natural resources management plan. The consultant that we have who's helping us put together has done bio-blitzes in the past with other organizations and suggested that it might be a good idea for us to do the same. Our management plan, our land use plan, covers over 100 years of existence for the landfill. We have 30 years of life with maybe a 20-year extension after that, and then we have to maintain that landfill, take care of it for 40 years after that. So we need to plan for 100 years of use of that property. So this is a good way for us to get an inventory today of what's on the site, and then how do we take care of it and plan for the future.
And you are – we'll get into what exactly you're looking for and volunteers and whatnot. But today there are a couple students who are joining you, and you said that you want to get different universities involved in this project.
Yeah, so we're in the middle of a community outreach effort. We're trying to incorporate educational opportunities with Viterbo and with UWL and with Western Technical College. We give a lot of tours, and so we do a lot of educating of the public, especially with the universities. But what we want people to understand is that we have this facility that can be used as a living laboratory. So how do we get those students and those instructors out to our facility, educate them as far as the opportunities that we have, and get them to use our site, maybe do some research that would give us better information as far as what we have and how best to prepare it for the future.
And Krista, was there any reason that you decided to get involved in this project as a UW lacrosse student?
I'm actually doing it as a capstone project, and it's just a really nice way to network and outreach to the community. I'm a recreation management major, and that's kind of what I'll be doing. And so it's just a nice way to get experience. And I remember back when I took my gen ed environmental studies class and I took the tour of the landfill at the beginning, I was like, oh, really? We're going to go to the landfill? This is going to be interesting. And when I got out there, I was like, this is really cool. Like the way that they are being sustainable and trying to, you know, help the environment. And, you know, even when they're, you know, using it as a landfill, I just really liked that. And so it was really nice to kind of go back there and kind of give back. So.
And are you trying to involve maybe some of your fellow classmates at UW Lacrosse in this project?
Yep. I'm talking to a lot of professors and some of my classmates, and hopefully we can get a lot of them out there and just kind of get experience. And I think that they're working it so they can get some extra credit too. So that'll be another incentive.
And Colton, what about at Viterbo? Why was it that you decided to get involved in this?
Well, it's actually a capstone course for me too. And I was talking to my advisor about it, and she's like, you know, you should really, you know, check out the landfill. You know, they're doing a lot of cool stuff out there. And she knew Nick, and so I got to go meet with Nick and Hank, and they explained me the project. And I was like, that is so cool. I was like, I would definitely want to be involved with this. So from then on, I was just, let me get into this and let me get my hands wet with this.
I mean, and you seem so passionate about it, too.
Right.
And, well, you both do, but.
Right. And my major is environmental sustainability. So this is like, boom, boom. You know, it's, you know, using the land, but then also preserving it for future generations. So it goes right along with it.
And do some of your fellow classmates, are they involved in this as well?
Trying to get as many as possible, but I mean, everyone's got something going on, so we're going to see how many we can get.
And are you two, and I guess, Nick, maybe you should mention that there is a Western Technical College student also involved?
No, that's where we want to do some more outreach.
Okay.
So if anybody from Western wants to come out and help, give me a call.
So will you two be collaborating at all on your research, or are you looking at different aspects of the work going on there?
I think we're both kind of on the same page, like We're kind of bouncing stuff off of each other, like, oh, what about this? What about this? And we have, like, a page that we're working on together, and so we're kind of sharing all the same information.
That's nice. Nick, did you want to add something?
Yeah, there's going to be a report due at the end of this, which is going to kind of put everything into a neat, handy package that we can review. So it'll give us a document that will give us all the information as far as what's been gathered and what the experts have to say as far as what's out there. It'll give us an inventory of everything that's available. And so they'll have to collaborate on some of that.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about an upcoming BioBlitz at the La Crosse County Landfill. My guests are Nick Nichols. He's the La Crosse County Sustainability Coordinator. Colton Lewis is a Viterbo University student working on the project. And Krista Buhman is a UW La Crosse student working on the project. So at this point in time, I'm sure there are plants and animals at the county landfill that have been identified. What are you seeing up at the county landfill?
Well, there's plants and animals that we've seen on the landfill. We haven't done any kind of inventory.
Sure.
But as far as local animals that are available, you name it, we've seen it. You know, we've got raccoons and possum and turkey and deer. And we have eagles and golden eagles, kestrels, red-tailed hawks. We have bluebird houses that were put out for bluebirds last year by an Eagle Scout for a project. And so you name it, we've probably got it. But what we really want is what kind of numbers should we be having? I mean, do we have more than we should have? Do we have less? What kind of habitats need to be available for those types of species? And we're not just talking, you know, birds and mammals. We're talking reptiles. We're talking amphibians. We're talking insects. Anything that we can get an idea as far as what should be there, what shouldn't, we want to know.
And are there any species that are potentially unique to that area?
Boy, you got me.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's going to be part of our discovery, is that maybe we do find some unique species that are within this particular part of La Crosse County and that we should be protecting.
Did either of you want to add something to that?
Mm-mm,
no.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Come on, guys. Jump on in.
So, Nick, you mentioned that, you know, the landfill is 350 acres, and maybe what people don't realize is the fact that only a little portion of that, not little, but a portion of that is actually used for landfill. The geographic makeup is, it includes forests and prairies, which
and wetland,
yep. Wetlands, yeah.
You bet. We've got a pretty diverse area out there. I mean, our land runs from a small wetland on the west side of the landfill to bluff and forest on the east side of the landfill, with a lot of area in between. We've got over 350 acres. Only 50 acres is landfill, and only 5 acres is open for disposal of material at any one time. So when you come out to the landfill, what you see is a lot of green space. And especially now coming up in spring, it's going to be an interesting transformation. So we would certainly like to invite anybody to come out and take tours.
So why is it that you want to better understand the species that are currently, you know, living at the landfill in a way? Krista?
To understand. For this
yeah, point. Like why take on a project like the BioBlitz?
I think it's really good for the community to understand the importance of various species that need to be protected. And I think that, you know, it's such a large area and it's really important to preserve that habitat, especially if you have that property for long periods of time. I think that's just one of the important reasons why you should be.
And not only that, but like when you're telling people, you're like, oh, we're running a BioBlitz at the landfill. They're like, what? You're at the landfill? Like, what are you thinking? Like, what's even out there? And then, so then if you're going out there and you actually do the BioBlitz and you find out, oh, we got this, this, and this, they're like, wow, they have all those at the landfill. I wonder what I have in my place. And, you know, it kind of makes other people think about it too.
Well, and this isn't just an insignificant piece of property. It's 350 acres within La Crosse County. And it's a piece of property that's under a certain amount of development, but for the rest of it, it won't be developed. Right now, we're currently waiting to hear the frogs. We have a lot of wetlands. We have a lot of holding ponds for the water runoff that comes off of the landfill, not from in the landfill, but from the land surrounding the landfill. Frogs are a great indicator of health. You know, if there's healthy holding ponds, if there's healthy wetlands, you're going to have frogs. If there's a problem, you're not. And so what we're interested in is making sure that we maintain that healthy environment and we use those animals and those plants as a good indicator.
And, I mean, kind of going off of that, I know that you all do testing of the water and the soils out there, but, I mean, are there risks associated or are you hoping to better understand potential risks associated with you know, a frog living at the landfill or a raccoon who may be scavenging around the landfill?
There's always risks. But what we try to do is we mitigate those risks. We plan ahead for those risks. And that, I think that's an important part of this study. Is are we affecting some part of the land within the landfill complex that we don't know what we're doing? You know, we do a lot of studies. We have a lot of experts. We have consultants that come in and help us. But, you know, you can't understand everything all the time. And so that's why you go out and you study and you take a look at what is happening. You know, is there a weak spot within a certain part of the landfill that maybe we're just missing? And that's why if we can bring in these students and these other experts – they might see something that we've missed. That's a great opportunity to work together. I mean, we're so lucky to have these three institutions of higher learning. There's so many people who are interested in the environment and interested in learning more and interested in protecting it. And so what we want to do is we want to bring everybody out to the landfill and help us do that.
Can you think of any hypotheticals, maybe situations you talked about? Maybe there's a certain area at risk. And you decide or you realize this through the BioBlitz, how exactly could you change your practices if something is discovered at the BioBlitz?
Well, and that's exactly what we're trying to find out. What is out there? Is there some type of invasive species that we currently have that we could eliminate, you know, and actually create an environment that would enhance habitat? We have a herpetology expert that we're hoping to get on site, a snake expert. We want to create habitats for snakes. Snakes are a great indicator of the health of a facility just like this. Plus, they also like to eat mice and rats, you know. And, you know,
which
I've
I'm
never
sure are plentiful at the landfill.
I've never seen a rat out there, but you never know. But, yeah, we'd like to make sure that we can provide good habitat for all the animals that we need out there.
Is there anything that you two are hoping will come from this BioBlitz?
I guess I'm just overall interested in, you know, the amount of different organizations and people that we can get involved to help out and then, you know, see what we can find out there and see if we find anything that's like, oh, my God, you know, that's crazy. That's out at the landfill? Wow. So that's what I'm interested in.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about an upcoming BioBlitz at the La Crosse County Landfill. My guests are Colton Lewis. He's a Viterbo University student who's working on the project. Krista Booman is a UW La Crosse student also working on the project. And Nick Nichols is the La Crosse County Sustainability Coordinator. You know, with all the wetlands and the forest and the prairie out in the landfill, do you ever imagine a day that maybe trails are created out there? Or is there a day where you would encourage people to come out and explore the habitats beyond the days that you're having the BioBlitz?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. A couple of years ago, we did a sustainable harvest of the 88 acres of forest that we have. You know, a lot of farmers who have logging done, they'll go in there, they'll rip out every log that they can possibly use. We did a sustainable harvest. So we took those that were maybe a little older than they were, you know, past their prime, and we took the logs that were best to harvest, and we left those that we could harvest later. In fact, our next harvest will probably be in another 15 years. But when we did that, the money that we made, we brought in about $38,000. We're going to take that money and we're actually going to take the logging roads that were put into the forest and convert them to hiking and biking trails. Huh. We're also working with the city of La Crosse. We have a 0.2-mile paved trail that's already been installed. And we're working with an Eagle Scout who's going to help us put a bridge over the wetland this summer. And so we're going to extend more trails around the site of the landfill. Our goal is to actually encompass the entire landfill at some point.
Interesting. And Krista, you had talked before about, you know, the first time that you went out to the landfill for a class project. And now maybe there's going to be an expansion at some point where you could enjoy the landfill more.
Yeah, that'll be great. I would love to go out and walk the trails.
Are there other communities that, you know, have done something like a BioBlitz at their county landfill before? Or city or state?
I'm not aware of any. Our consultant has helped some other organizations do BioBlitzes. I'm not sure if they've done them at landfills.
Because it seems like, and maybe I'm naive, but the term BioBlitz seems to be maybe used more in recent years. It's interesting because I talked with the Friends of the Marsh group recently, mm-hmm. and they talked about how they're doing a BioBlitz at the marsh to better understand the different species that are living within the marsh. And you all are doing the BioBlitz at the county landfill. Is there elsewhere in La Crosse that's undertaking BioBlitz?
Boy, you got me. I'd never even heard of a BioBlitz until a few months ago. Yeah. So.
Well, and I wonder, you know, you hear about the Audubon bird count, mm-hmm. Which I guess is similar but maybe has its differences too to mm-hmm. a BioBlitz.
Well, and what's great about that is you've got experts who are bird experts. They're looking at all the species of birds that are coming in. We're on a major flyway for the migration. I mean, that's wonderful to have in our community. And there again, another example of great experts, local experts.
Are you hoping to take this on annually?
That would be great. I would love to do that. In fact, our timing right now, this may not be the perfect period to have a BioBlitz simply because it's
towards the end of April.
It's towards the end of April. You're not getting a lot of the plants growing and starting up in the spring quite yet. So we might plan on doing this again. Well, yeah, you know, there is that too. Might be able to drag them back. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, is this something that I know that you're probably solely focused on the research at hand, but I mean, could you see yourself coming back and just seeing how it evolves over time?
Yeah, I definitely think I would come back and see. I think that would be really cool.
And Colton?
Yeah, I agree too. I just, you know, this is almost like the baseline. And then you want to come back and you're like, well, what's it going to be like next year or mm-hmm. next year or next year? You know, you want to see the progress that's being made out there.
Well, and especially too, if there's a bit of a habitat restoration that could be in the future as a result of this.
Yeah, in fact, we just did our first prairie grass restoration last year. So this will be the first full year of that prairie.
And will this be an indicator or one of the indicators just to see how that went?
Oh, absolutely. We've got a group that we're hoping to bring in that are better experts at prairie grasses. So hopefully we'll be able to do a review of that and make sure that's establishing itself in the proper way. And then we'll learn how to properly take care of it.
So one of the things that you all have mentioned a bit, Colton and Krista, you talk about trying to get your colleagues to come and work with you. But Nick, you've talked about just looking for volunteers to come out and work on the BioBlitz Day, which is April 26th, I should mention. Are you looking for solely experts, or are you looking for people maybe who just have a curiosity and appreciation for biodiversity?
Oh, we definitely need both. We need people who can come out and identify those plants and animals for us and give us an interpretation of whether they should be there or not. But we also need volunteers who have an interest in preserving our natural environment, who have an interest in coming out and learning. Definitely come out, give us a hand. Please contact us, let us know that you're coming. I got to pick up lunch for everybody, so I need to know who's going to be there.
What can people who do volunteer their time on the 26th, I'm wondering if you can explain what they can expect, what they'll be doing that day.
Well, hopefully what we'll be doing is we'll have a pre-meeting where some of our experts will be explaining what they're looking for. We'll identify an area that they need to cover. And then hopefully they'll go out for several hours and do exactly what they need to do, which is identify plants and animals.
And Colton, what will you be doing that day? Do you know yet?
Well, I think I'll be helping to organize a little bit, you know, and get people where they need to be and trying to point people in the right direction, but also I want to get out there and help out too with any experts. So,
Do you have a specific field that you are hoping to learn a little more about?
I'm kind of up for anything. I mean, I've been in this area my entire life, so I know a little bit of everything, but I don't know. I guess I'm open for anything that's out at the landfill.
Wherever the help's needed.
Yeah.
And Krista, what about you? What will you be doing that day?
Well, I have a conflict with one of my classes, but I'm hopefully going to be able to talk to my professor about that and see if I can at least get out there for a couple hours. So,
Do you have any particular interests, whether it's amphibians or birds or whatnot?
I have been really interested in birds my entire life, and so I think I would love to be out there and see what I can hear and what I can see. I'd love to do that, but.
Is there anything else that the three of you want to talk about when it comes to this BioBlitz project or any other future efforts going on at the county landfill? Krista?
I just think it's a really good opportunity just to get hands-on experience if you're interested in, like, the outdoors or have a curiosity. I just think it's really good. You know, you can bring friends and just get out there and get a better understanding. I mean, it's never-ending what you can find out there, so.
Colton?
Or even get some exercise.
Yeah, true. Yeah. And hopefully it'll be a beautiful day.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And Nick?
Well, I think we're hopefully going to have an excellent opportunity here to do our inventory, get a lot of people out there who haven't been there before. And so we can not only do the inventory, but do some educating as far as our facility as well.
Nick Nichols is the La Crosse County Sustainability Coordinator. Colton Lewis is a Viterbo University student working on the La Crosse County BioBlitz project. And Krista Buhman is a UW La Crosse student also working on the project. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to contact information for today's guests in case you are interested in volunteering for the April 26th BioBlitz at the La Crosse County Landfill. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, you can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.